It sure is. And our special guest tonight, Andy Lloyd, and we'll take your phone calls, not only about 2012, but also about the Anunnaki. He's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Andy Lloyd, and your phone calls. So when do you think the sequel will come out?
I've started writing it this week, and I've already got some very exciting material. I'm in a rather privileged position, George, because I only live about 10 miles away from the super secret spy base. So, you know, I got some interesting things going into that, but let's put it that way.
Good for you. Let's go to the phones. Joel in Las Vegas, Nevada, first-time caller. Hey, Joel.
Hi. How you doing, George?
Good. Thanks for calling.
I love the show.
Great. What's up?
I heard earlier you're talking about possible wormholes and thing in 2012 that involves galactic alignment as well. Is it possible that Wormwood or Nibiru could pass through a wormhole instantaneously and we wouldn't even see it coming?
That's possible, Andy.
It's an interesting hypothesis because the whole idea of hyperspace, of course, is a science fiction idea, but one that science itself can see working. The argument against wormholes is that the amount of energy needed to put any matter through them is just so extraordinary. It's probably more than the energy of the universe itself. But, you know, that's science putting on the brakes again. It's nothing to say that someone won't come up with that idea. How would a planet move through a wormhole? My God. I mean, that is an absolutely terrifying possibility, I have to say. Of course, it would create the possibility of something just appearing, rather like, I suppose, in the film Star Wars, where one of the Star Wars films, where the Imperial fleet just kind of turn up en masse. There's no way of predicting such an event. I would have thought in our known science it's an impossibility, but you should never say never. So, I suppose it's a possibility.
There's no doubt if we're being visited, Andy, that they have found a better propulsion system. They're not coming here conventionally, but they might be coming through wormholes, like the movie Contact.
I think once you start talking about sort of moving through dimensions, then I think it's fair to say that the whole idea of extra dimensions is a very real one. And things could be moving in and out of our dimension all the time. I mean, it's sort of stems from the paranormal idea as well, really, where ghosts could be moving through dimensions, and that there is something beyond within the fabric of the universe itself that we simply don't understand, and we call it supernatural, we call it paranormal. If those intelligences are interacting with us from those dimensions, they're effectively alongside us right now, and they can just shift in and shift out again. If you could harness that, you would create the most incredible ability to move around. The other possibility, of course, is anti-gravity and things like that, that they're able to sort of harness energies to move around within our skies in the way that UFOs appear to. Again, the technologies that are seemingly beyond us, but not beyond the realm of sort of our imaginations and possible science in the future.
Let's go to Alan in Michigan, driving around east of the Rocky or Wildcard Line. Go ahead, Alan.
Yeah, I just wanted to talk about, there was a show on around Christmas time discussing the birth of Christ and how we're not real sure about the exact time he was born, according to this show. I don't remember if it's on Discovery or History, but they said there might be like a three-year error, like he might have actually been born around 3 BC.
Right,
or,
right.
Like up to 7 BC. And they actually showed this with trying to do it astronomically with two of the planets that might have been something that they do every so many thousand years. I think it was like Mars and Jupiter, where they one circles the other and would have been like the Star of Bethlehem, possibly, and they kind of come in line with each other, and when it's doing this, it almost looks like the one planet is backing up across the sky and going the other direction, and they said the Star of Bethlehem was supposed to look like that, and they tied it in with 3 BC. So that being the case, if they're 3 years off on our calendar, we would be in 2012 right now. So what do you think about that?
I think Alan's right. The program, the context of the program, I think he's described it very, very well. One of the problems with the nativity, with the story of the Starry Bethlehem, is that Herod died in 4 BC. So, you know, I mean, it's a bit of a pick-and-mix, the nativity. You can take parts of it and say that was real, and then other parts of it perhaps weren't. And it becomes quite a complex sort of thing to tear to pieces, if you like, and analyse. I would say this. If there was a Star of Bethlehem, I would agree with Alan. It must have been before what we understand to be 0 BC, if such a thing exists. You know, it's go to minus one or one. Because of the Herod thing. You know, if Herod's part of the story, then he must have been alive when Jesus was born, which puts him back before 4 BC. There are an awful lot of astronomers who've written books trying to decode the Star of Bethlehem, and they've generally come up with variations on the same theme, which is, as you describe, there's a conjunction. A triple conjunction is generally the favoured one, a conjunction with Jupiter and Saturn and possibly Mars. But Jupiter and Saturn sort of run little circles around each other because, as you say, there's a sort of retrograde movement that you see in the sky. And that triple conjunction is thought in astrology to be very, very significant. And I think this 7 BC was the triple conjunction. So that would appear to be the date. Now, quite right, does that mean our calendar's completely out by about 4 years? Yes. Does that have an impact on 2012? Well, you're then having to place two different calendars on top of each other and analyze them, because the Mayans were, of course, decoding from a completely different context. But yes, essentially that could mean that the whole thing is out by 4, 5, 6 years if the people who are understanding the Mayans were working from our contemporary understanding of the Christian calendar. It is complicated, isn't it? And you know, you can go backwards and forwards with this. We may be years out in either direction. So that puts things in context with the exact nature of the time of 2012.
Let's go to Florence, Oregon. Mark on the wildcard line. Hi, Mark. Welcome to the show.
Hey, good evening, George and Andy. And thanks for the great show. I appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Well, Andy, I can see you're an Englishman who has a well-rounded knowledge, and you're most welcome, sir. I'd like to mention to you, you may or may not have heard of, and you may well have, I gather, but there are irregularities in the orbits, as I understand it, from the astronomical research done back in the early 1980s by a number of astronomers, including Dr. Flandrin and Dr. James A. Harrington.
Van Flandern, I think. Right?
Van Flandern, yeah. Yes,
you're
right.
Who just George. Passed away.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Well, rest his soul. Of the Naval Observatory in Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
And that they had actually taken photographs of Planet X, and that these photographs were suppressed, that they had an actual record as such. But in a June 1982 New York Times article, the irregularities of the orbits of Pluto and Uranus are cited as far as the explanation for these irregularities. I wrote this down. I'm losing my place. Excuse me. That they're being caused by the approach of a planet toward our solar system. A NASA astronomer was going to release information, but he wasn't allowed to. That actually, the direction that Planet X is approaching our solar system is from the Orion constellation. So that in the early 1980s, 1982 and 1983, Andy, I just wanted to point you toward that area of time, that if you can get back into that time through the media as such, in your research, that I think you may find some real, some extremely strong evidence that Planet X is getting close enough to us as to where it's actually causing these orbital irregularities in Pluto and Uranus. And that I could say more, but I don't want to take up too much time. I want to let the other callers get in here.
Okay, good comments.
Okay.
There he goes.
It's a very interesting point. The things that Mark's talked about, of course, are absolutely correct. Harrington worked for the Naval Observatory, I think, and Van Flandern is, I'm sorry to hear that he's passed away.
Yeah.
A great thinker.
Yeah, it's very sad.
I saw him give a talk by a UFO conference some years ago, and he obviously has an exceptional mind. He was very interested in exploding planet hypothesis, and I think Van Flandern was somewhat skeptical in later years as to whether Planet X could be real, or at least in the context of how it would have been captured by the sun. He often pointed out, you know, is it possible for an object to be captured in the way that was described in the Enumerelish? They did produce some very, very interesting thoughts on the matter. The Pioneer spacecraft that were exploring the outer solar system around about that time or before that, their trajectories allowed astronomers to establish the orbital paths of Neptune and Uranus very exactly. And it would appear that they were not being moved around, affected by a very, very large Planet X body. However, once the Pioneers got beyond the outer planets and they started making their way through the Kuiper Belt and beyond, then something very, very strange happened, and the Pioneers started to slow down. And I believe that effect is connected with the extra mass of the solar system with this dark star. So I think that's evidence that can go both ways. And certainly in the 19th century, Neptune and Uranus, calculations made by astronomers certainly indicated at that time that they were being affected by an external body that was absolutely massive. And indeed, that's where the whole Planet X thing started off. That was 100 years ago. And, you know, the Lowell and Tombaugh, who discovered Pluto, they weren't looking for Pluto. They were looking for Planet X. They were looking for something very, very big. And they found Pluto as part of that search. So, you know, the discussion that Mark's put forward there, it's got a great history and, is an ongoing story.
When do you think the major story will occur, Andy? Disclosure, or, you know, where we really know something?
I think that the more that technology and information technology, and the more that the ability of astronomers to buy really, really good scopes to use independently expands, then the closer you get towards a point where it's very, very difficult to cover anything up. If there has been a cover-up going on, once people out there in the community who are not effectively under control can pull out a really, really good-sized scope, find something, and then immediately disseminate that knowledge throughout the world, then, once that discovery is made, how do they stop it? How do they cover that up? How do they get on top of that? It's one of the themes I take up in Ezekiel 1, you know, how is that controlled? So if there has been a cover-up for the last 25 years, and there's reason to suspect there has been, then the sort of lifeblood of that cover-up is ending, because, you know, the ability to control it, the ability to control academic science or NASA or what have you, starts to give way to this sort of more democratic means of obtaining information that you know, there's no, if someone spots this object moving and puts it on the internet, that's it. So I think that's one of the reasons why the sky searches have been recommenced after 25 years. I think it's possible that they need to get this out now before the story runs away from them, and it's better for them to, hey, find it again and release the information in a controlled way than let it come out in some sort of maverick way that they can't control.
Okay, next up, let's go to San Luis Obispo, California, west of the Rockies. Hey, Doug.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
I was. There's a definite difference between religion and Christianity. Christianity is more rare to find. And I was adding to the previous caller. He said the star was over Bethlehem. It had nothing to do with the star of Bethlehem. The astrologers were searching for a young child 2 years old. He'd already grown up to 2 years old. You know, he's inside of a house, and he wasn't in a manger, okay? Mm. And that star they're looking for was a moving star. It had nothing to do with the star in heaven. It was a pillar of fire. It was a theophany. It was Jesus' theophany. Okay, which never entered him until after his resurrection. When he was a young child at the River Jordan, the Spirit of God came down upon him, and that's where God became one with man. See, that's a Christian version of it. You have the religious version of it and the Christian version of it. Okay? And I really have no question with that. I just wanted to add to the previous caller, okay?
All right, very good. Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Interesting thoughts there, Andy.
Yeah, it's a very confusing picture for me, personally, as a researcher. I when I first started looking at the Star of Bethlehem, I was quite excited about the possibility that in some way it could be Nibiru returning in the heavens. You know, that Nibiru has got this sort of emblematic or symbolic feeling of being the king, returning. And the two things seem to tie in very well. And I've worked on this for years and years and years and years. And I just, as time went on, the picture for me just became more and more confusing. And Doug's point is moot, because I'm sure he's quite right in what he says from one of the perspectives of Christianity. But there are so many different versions of this that, in fact, there's two different versions of it in the Bible. That trying to find out exactly what the truth of the matter is becomes a real minefield. And I'm not a biblical scholar. I'm not pretending to be. But as a sort of lay researcher who's trying to get his head around this stuff, I became quite frustrated by it, to be honest. So, that's my feeling on that point, really.
Next up, let's go to Brooklyn, New York. Kevin, east of the Rockies. Hi, Kevin. Go ahead.
How you doing, George? Former Marine from Brooklyn here. Got a question for Andy.
Sure thing.
First-time caller, by the way, and I love you, George, and just want to let you know. My question is that we were talking the other night. We all listen together.
That's right, we're family.
We were talking about the NSA, okay? Now, the NSA, as you know, used to stand for No Such Agency. What do you think, Andy, is their part as far as their capability of covering up what they don't want the general public or people that follow the mainstream media, okay, which I don't. I don't follow mainstream media. I don't read papers. I only listen to Coast or I read certain things, and I won't follow mainstream media because it's all fabricated. It's all, you know it, I know it, we all know it. You know, just like when the gas prices went up. I think that was a ploy, you know, because when I was in the service, you know, I knew some people that knew people. Anyway, to get to what I'm getting to is, when the gas prices went up a few months ago, if you remember, right, kept going up,
up, right?
They wanted to keep raising the price until we screamed uncle. We never did, like we did in the 60s. You know, I'm 46 now. Back in the days, we were the protested in the streets, you know, and people don't do that no more. Now they got them on all these psychotropic medications. This is what they were talking about. When I was in the service, I used to hear, you know, people talk, and they would say they like the country on psychotropic. It keeps them docile. It keeps them from complaining. Mm. Now, what do you think about all that, Andy?
Well, I think your point's very, very well taken. I feel the same way. Insofar as our generation does not appear to be angry, you know, we're incredibly...
Not yet, Andy.
Well, no, but what is the point where people stop taking it? You know, when do you reach that point?
I think they're getting really close, Andy. I really do. Stay with us. We're going to come right back. We're going to take final phone calls for you on Coast to Coast AM. On our next Coast to Coast program, Stuart Wild joins us. He's got some incredible things to say about poisonous people, reincarnation, dangerous places on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome to Coast to Coast. We are with Andy Lloyd. We're going to take your final phone calls right here. Andy, you ready for some more?
Sure, sounds good.
Let's go to Texas City, Texas. Hey, Corey, go ahead.
How you doing, George? How you been, man?
Okay, all is well.
Yeah, I'm calling from East Texas. Just one quick subject, and I'll listen off air. Okay, we live in a reality, and then the reality of 2012, how it could energize or anyway. I was just wondering if your guest could talk more about maybe the effects of the reality of 2012 and passing away. When you pass away, would that really kind of matter? Or I just want your guest to...
What do you mean by pass away?
Like, you know, when you die or pass away, it's like a different reality. You either go to heaven or whoever you believe your God is or your faith or religion. And I was just hoping or asking just real fast if he could touch up more like in the different realms or realities of this current life of 2012 when it comes and passing away. Would it have like more effect? Like would it really matter when you pass away? That's what I'm trying to say. Alice, not fair.
Okay. Well, that's an interesting question.
It is an interesting question. It's metaphysical, really. I think possibly it would be an interesting question for your person who's coming on tomorrow as well, really, in terms of his discussion of reincarnation. If reincarnation's real, this is sort of subject close to my heart, really, if you could be reincarnated onto other planets, how would that work? I mean, that's an interesting thought right there. So say in the next few years we discovered this dark star, Planet X, Nibiru, and we found that there was some life up there, and we obtained a spiritual connection with the entities on this world. Now, this is completely out there. This is even more out there than I normally talk about, George. But what's to say that our spirits or our souls couldn't in some way transport themselves to that place to be reincarnated as a different type of being, that instead of being reincarnated, say, as a human on this earth or an animal on this earth, you could be reincarnated as an Anunnaki. And, you know, this is kind of a topic that I've looked at in the past in terms of the religious element of the ancient thinking as to whether, you know, that like the Egyptians, they mummified their people, they were waiting for something. They mummified in waiting for something to return. They set out all their graveyards in a certain way. They set their monuments in a certain way that were connected with the heavens. And I often thought, you know, maybe it's something to do with Nibiru. Nibiru turns up, and then in part of their religion, the souls rise to this planet and effectively go to heaven and are, you know, spiritually connected with that place, which is like the source of life and so on. So 2012, if you follow that very obscure line of thought, then if there is an awakening amongst us that there is intelligent life elsewhere, spiritual life elsewhere, then maybe that could create an opening for us as spiritual beings to find another way.
Do you think we'll all be surprised on December 21st, 2012? I mean, everybody's got their own theories. Could it be something we haven't even thought of?
Yes. Like your caller earlier on, Joe, who talked about something just appearing out of nowhere. You know, there are physical possibilities to do with the sun. There's physical possibilities about comet swarms and so on, which might produce some kind of Armageddon effect. But, you know, there's also this spiritual connotation. We're living through very, very difficult times at the moment. We may be coming out of those times around about 2012. It might take us years to come out of what could be a very, very difficult time for the whole world. We could, during that time, end up sort of, you know, people talk about New World Order, but there could be a sort of an amalgamation globally of thinking, and that seems to be the movement we're moving in. And perhaps if we discovered intelligent life, an awakening of the fact that we're not alone and that we're one species together and we're in it together. You know, there's a huge, huge possibility there for a flowering of our consciousness and change, whether it's going to actually occur on the stroke of midnight, on the winter solstice, I don't have the answer to that. I don't think anyone does. There's only one way of finding out, and that is waiting and see what happens. It's, one thing's for sure, the awakening amongst us as a people of the possibility is going to allow a lot of people to come to listen to programs like Coast to Coast, read books, to think about it, because as 2012 approaches, people are going to become more interested in the general population and open themselves up to new ideas.
All right, back to the phones are going. Let's go to Dallas, Texas. Rex, welcome to Coast to Coast. Hi, Rex.
Gentlemen, enjoying the show very much. I've listened to you for a long time.
Thank you.
Yep, and let's talk about 2012, and let's talk about the possibility of a comet or something that possibly may be heading our way that we don't even know about, one of these long-period comets or something. And let's talk about the debris field that may be in front of a Planet X or a large body or object. Recently, a lot of debris has been coming into our atmosphere, large chunks. The one recently, 40 yards in diameter that barely missed us by 38,000 miles.
Yep.
And then before that, a flaming ball of something they thought might have been a meteorite coming down. And it looks like a lot more activity that you can see with your naked eye, objects that could possibly be the debris field in front of whatever this is that's heading our way. And remember the movie a long time ago, that one of the lines in that movie, "My God, man, a comet that size could destroy the whole planet." But I don't believe it will destroy the whole planet. But whatever's going to hit us, they talk about wormwood in Revelation. They talk about it's likely that we're now up, that our time limit is up, and one of these large objects could be due to hit us or whatever. I'm not really sure that 2012 might be the day, but if it is, the only place I think we'll be safe is in the caves under Ayers Rock in Australia.
What do you think about that, Andy Lloyd?
It's the possibility of comet swarms, I think, is the major threat, I think, because comets, small enough to have evaded detection so far, 3 years away, yes, we wouldn't really be picking them up. There could be a swarm on the outside of the solar system moving our way right now. I think they picked up one recently called Lulin that was the title of a
That's the comet. Yes,
yeah,
that's right.
Comet.
The green one.
And as you rightly point out, Rex, you know, that little, 10-story building that swept past us the other day, you know, they spotted it before it was incoming. There wasn't a lot of notice, but, you know, they realized it was coming in. But, you know, 40,000 miles in terms of, astronomical, relative to astronomical length is extremely close. I mean, that really is a near miss. It's, you know, only a fifth the distance from here to the moon. It's a real near miss, and it does make you think that they're not on top of this. I don't think there's going to be a planet appearing, as I've discussed before. I think, you know, it's too big. It would be between Saturn and Uranus right now. And, you know, if you're talking about the kind of object I'm talking about, I mean, it's just you'd be able to walk out in your garden and have a look at it at the moment. But if it's a smaller body, about an Earth-sized body, then, you know, it could be sort of on the edges of the solar system out beyond the Kuiper belt and then come in. It would take more than 3 years to get here. But if you're talking about comets, if you're talking about a swarm, a cloud of comets, there, you know, that would be something to worry about. And there have been incidents in the past where extinctions happened, as we talked right at the beginning of the show, that were potentially connected with swarms of comets. And certainly 3.9 billion years ago, the solar system got absolutely hammered. I mean, it was an extraordinary event that happened called the Late Great Bombardment, which just really obliterated the early solar system. And to this day, astrophysicists really cannot explain what happened then. You know, something big came through, lots of stuff, and there were sort of multiple hits. So, I mean, if you're worried about the possibilities, that sets a precedent. And if you try and look up what happened 3.9 billion years ago during the Late Great Bombardment, then I think that would put the willies up anyone, really, to be honest.
Let's go to Michigan. John, east of the Rockies. John, you're on with Andy Lloyd.
It's such a pleasure to be here to speak with you guys. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
My point is that I believe from reading Revelation chapter 21, talking about a new Jerusalem,
mm-hmm.
and then in verses 15, 16, and 17, it gives the dimensions of the kingdom. It's a furlong times 12,000. That's an eighth of a mile times 12,000. It's 1,500 miles cubic. Cubic. Imagine that. It's an asteroid. And I'm pretty sure that it's the same. I'm pretty sure it's the same object that came in with the Hale-Bopp comet. And if it is, I've got SOHO photographs of that object going around the sun, going in and out of the photosphere without effect. And if it's been hanging out in the outer regions of our solar system, waiting for the day and the hour, it very well could be possible that that's what everybody is excited about. Now, interestingly enough, during the process of all that back in 1996, I called in and spoke about this and told people that I think that's what it is. And so if you do your research in the scriptures and realize that the size of that kingdom, New Jerusalem, is 1,500 miles cubic, and it's always considered to be the kingdom of the heavens, could it not also be the Star of David?
What's the strike date? What do you think,
I don't
John?
Know. No one knows the day of the hour. No one knows the day of the hour. We know the season. We're in the season now.
Okay, you're crackling up on us, too. Nobody does know, Andy Lloyd.
And I don't either. I mean, you know, I I think the more you research it, the more possibilities open up to you, because there are so many different ideas out there. And we're working with texts that are thousands of years old, written in obscure language, They're not set out as scientific records. I mean, the Mayan thing is really quite exceptional because the dating on that is specific. But most other texts from the sort of the Middle East, the Bible and the Enumerelish and all the other texts that come from that region, they, you know, they're written in very flowery language. They're not specific. They're not scientific. So none of us can really pinpoint anything at all. You know, what one of the reasons why people think that the 2012 event might be connected with an incoming object is because it links back around about 3,600 years ago to Velikovsky's Exodus event.
Right.
And he discusses the possibility of this destroyer or this large sort of planet appearing in the sky around about that time and being a significant object that was talked about. And therefore, the 3,600 year thing ties in and people can make it a contemporary thing. In terms of Christian script, you know, even the early Christians thought the end times were upon them. You know, the way that Revelations was worded and, you know, St. John's Revelation, it created an idea that it could happen at any time. And even those early Christians thought that the second coming was upon them. And here we are 2,000 years ago still waiting. I don't want to disparage people's belief in this, but in context, it is very, very difficult to nail it as to when it is. And it's a natural instinct for us to think it's during our time. But, you know, 2012 is a significant marker.
And that date's not that far away, Andy.
And I would be a fool to say that it couldn't be significant. I really would. You know, it's there, it's staring us in the face, and it's coming down our throats, that date. So, you know, I'd be a fool to say that it wasn't significant.
That's a Friday night, December 21st, 2012, and you, too, are invited on the program. We're going to have about 500,000 people on the show.
Great. Well,
I mean, anything could happen.
It could. I mean, I described that very night, in my book, you know, the new book.
Yes, you do.
I've got it right there, and I don't want to give away.
Come on, let me read it. Come on. No, I won't. I won't. Let's go to New Jersey. First-time caller. Go ahead, Peter.
How you doing, George?
Okay.
How you doing, Andy?
Hi.
I have two questions for you. The first one is, do you think that the shadow people are aliens coming from the future and to collect information on us and for 2012? And number two, do you think that a star will explode on 2012 and destroy the Earth?
Take the second one first, Andy.
Stars exploding are random events. We can't judge them. When they do happen, the fallout from them is absolutely massive in terms of radiation. The danger lies in how far away they are because, as you know, distances between stars are absolutely immense. So an object that, you know, say we see something flashing in the sky, that's something that happened a long time ago, but there's no way of telling what's going to happen. And, of course, we get an impact from that. You know, the radiation comes through, the light comes through. If it was very, very close to us and it was a very, very big star that went nova, then, yeah, you know, that, there's no way of predicting that. But, you know, we haven't had a major extinction on this planet for, you know, 70 million years. So these events are very, very rare in our local neighborhood. So that's the first one. Again, you know, no way of predicting that. It could happen tomorrow. But, you know, that's just something like in, you know, the near-Earth objects that fly around us. You never know when something's not going to come crashing into us. It's not predictable.
Are you familiar with shadow people at all, Andy?
I am. I am an avid ghost hunter with my colleagues at Cosmic Conspiracies. We like to go out and ghost hunt. We take photographs. We get orbs. We have captured shadow people or something that might be interpreted to be shadow people. My friend Martin is a physical medium, rather. He sees ghosts on a regular basis. He sees people walking through our reality on a regular basis. I am certainly open to that possibility. Where they're from, I don't know. I mean, they clearly slip through dimensions. We've had a discussion before. Whether they're from the future to collect information, it's a wild hypothesis. But I don't know. I don't know. All I know is that we do get interacted with some form of intelligence or beings from outside dimensions. They do slip into our reality for a while. One way of looking at it is our reality is, if you imagine we're on a sort of two-dimensional piece of paper, and our whole reality is on a two-dimensional piece of paper, and every so often something will fall through the paper from above and fall through below, and we'll just see a little flip of it go through in our two dimensions. We'll just see something come through for a while and then it's gone. We can't see beyond those two dimensions. We can't see what's above and what's below us, and every so often it falls through, and I think that's what the shadow people do.
What is it about Ezekiel 1? What is it about this story that just made you say, I've got to do this, I've got to write this? What happened?
I really wanted to tackle 2012. I really wanted to try to get people thinking about the impact of that event, not just in terms of what might happen, but in terms of how governments react to it and how the potential panic that it might create can be held at bay. I also wanted to get into the science fiction of the thing and talk about how what we would do as a species if we found out that we were intimately connected with someone who we can get to, who we can interact with. How would we react? If we find out first, if we had that intelligence, what would our generals do? What would our leaders do? What would they want to do in order to make sure that we're fine? So it's almost like trying to discuss a preemptive strike, not in terms of a war, but in terms of how our people, our leaders, would take that knowledge and secretly use it to I don't know, enhance our species. It's a heavy story, George.
Pretty provocative indeed, Andy. Andy, thanks for being on the program. The novel, Ezekiel 1, you can find it Amazon.com. You can also go to his website, darkstar1.co.uk, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. For Kiris Coburn, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasur, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, we'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.